And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hello, I'm Ellen Whitcher. Today I'll be reading from The Story Bag, a collection of Korean folk tales by Kim Soo-un. The Father's Legacy. Once there lived an old man who had three sons. In time, he grew very, very old and lay on his deathbed. Just before he drew his last breath, he called his sons to his bedside. "You have cared for me a long time," he told them. "I have only a few more minutes left to live. I want to give each of you a legacy. But unlike in the old days, we now live in such poverty that I have nothing of value to leave to you. However, I want to leave at least something for you. When I die, you must leave this unfortunate house and try to find your own fortunes by yourselves." So saying, the old man bequeathed the eldest son a stone mill. To his second son, he left a long bamboo cane and a wine jug made from a gourd. And to the youngest, he left a hand drum. Soon the old man passed away. The three sons wept sorely at their father's death, but they did not forget to give him a decent burial. Then, when the funeral was finished, they left home, each taking with him the legacy left him by his father. After a while, they came to a place where the road split into three. The three brothers promised each other that they would meet once again at this point on a certain day, and then parted. The oldest brother took the road leading to the right, the second brother took the middle road, and the youngest proceeded along the road leading to the left. The oldest brother, carrying the heavy stone mill on his back, walked on and on. As the road started climbing into the mountains, night fell. It was a lonely section of the country where almost nobody ever came. The brother was hungry. On top of that, a cold wind had started blowing. He did not have the strength nor the courage to continue on. "I wonder if there's some place where I can sleep," the brother thought. And just then he spied an old tree standing just ahead. He decided he would spend the night under the tree and carried his heavy stone mill there. However, he suddenly felt afraid. "Oh, this is such a lonely place. What if some wild animal comes out at night?" he thought. He then again shouldered the stone mill, which he had placed on the ground, and climbed with it up into the branches of the tree. There he hung the mill on a stout branch and settled himself to go to sleep. It became completely dark. The night hours gradually passed. Tired from his long journey, the man was sound asleep. Suddenly he woke with a start. He could hear the sound of men talking nearby. Startled, the brother sat up in the tree and thought, "What in the world could be happening in this lonely place so far from many houses?" He peered down into the darkness and listened closely. There, underneath the tree, he could just make out a band of robbers arguing over the sharing of the goods they had stolen that day. "Your share is too large," said one. "No, my share is not enough," said another. And then they started to count their money. The older brother was amazed to hear the men counting in large sums. 1,000 riang, 2,000 riang. The brother suddenly nodded his head as though he had hit upon a good idea. He drew his stone mill to him and started to grind away. The stones began making a noise like thunder. The robbers under the tree were startled out of their wits. "This is terrible. There's not a single cloud in the sky, but it's thundering. The heavens are angry with us. We shall be punished. Let's go. Let's go." So saying, the robbers scattered helter-skelter, leaving behind them the gold and the silver and the treasures that they had stolen. The oldest brother climbed down from his perch in the tree and gathered up the spoils the robbers had left. In this way, thanks to the stone mill, The oldest brother became a rich man overnight and wasted no time in setting himself up in a splendid mansion. The second brother walked on and on for days and days. One evening he passed by a lonely cemetery. Night had fallen and it was pitch black. There wasn't a single star to be seen shining in the sky. The brother sat down beside a gravestone to rest his weary body and waited for dawn to break. It was just midnight when the brother heard the sound of footsteps from the other side of the dark graveyard. The footsteps sounded louder and louder, as if the person were coming closer. It was so dark he couldn't make out who it was. He was so scared he hardly dared to breathe, and he crouched against the gravestone, making himself as small as he could. The footsteps came right up to the place where he leaned close to the stone.
"Hurry, hurry, Mr. Skeleton," a voice said. "Get up. We have to do one job before dawn breaks. Tonight we're going to the home of a millionaire and steal his daughter's soul. Don't be such a lie-abed. Hurry and get up." It was an evil spirit who had come. When the brother heard the spirit's voice, he made up his mind in a flash and answered, "I've been awake for some time. Let's go then."
The evil spirit, hearing a strange voice, said in a puzzled voice, "Hey, you sound like a human being. Are you really a skeleton?"
"If you don't believe me," the brother said, "then feel me."
The evil spirit stretched out his hands and groped in the dark. "Well, all right then," the spirit said. "Let me feel your face." Well, the young man thrust forward the gourd wine jug that his father had given him, and the spirit felt the jug and said, "You're right. Your head hasn't a single hair on it. You must be a skeleton. But to make sure, let me feel your arm, too." The second son then put forth a long bamboo cane his father had left him. The spirit felt the bamboo cane and said, "What thin bones you have! How dry they are! A long, long time must have passed since you died." Then the spirit added, "Hurry, let's go. It will soon be dawn." The spirit and the brother walked quickly out of the graveyard and set off straight for the millionaire's mansion. When they got there, the house was in complete darkness. Not a person was awake. The spirit left the younger brother at the gate, saying, "Listen, Mr. Skeleton, you wait here. I'll go in by myself and steal the daughter's soul." So saying, the spirit slipped into the darkened mansion. A little while later, the spirit returned. "Say, did you get the brother's soul?" asked the brother. "Of course," the spirit replied. "I plucked it right out of her. Here, I have it tightly held in my hand. This is the girl's soul." "Oh, why keep it in your hand? Put it in here," the second son said, hurriedly taking his drawstring purse from his belt. The spirit put the soul into the purse and said, "Be careful now. Keep the purse tightly closed, or the soul will escape." The two then left the mansion and headed for the graveyard. Suddenly, away in the distance, they heard the first crowing of a cock. The spirit started with surprise when he heard the crowing. "This is bad," he said, and ran swiftly away, back to the place where spirits stay in the daytime, when they must not expose themselves. When day broke and the red sun showed itself in the east, the brother returned to the gate of the millionaire's mansion. He could hear the sound of people crying. The whole house was in an uproar. "Did something happen?" the brother asked innocently, and one of the servants replied, "The daughter of the house suddenly passed away in her sleep last night. She'd never been sick in her life, and so when she died suddenly, everybody was shocked beyond belief." "Well, perhaps I can bring the girl back to life," the brother said in a most innocent manner. The servant, on hearing this, ran into the mansion. Soon the rich father came out to the gate and asked the young man in. "If you can really bring my daughter back to life, I'll give you anything you desire. Please come have a look at my dead daughter," the father pleaded. The old man then led the second son to an inner room where the body of the daughter lay. The second son waved everybody away and commanded that no one enter the room. Then he shut the doors and the sliding windows tightly so that none could look in. Then he went and sat beside the girl's body. He took his purse out, and placing it close to the girl's nose, unloosened the purse strings. The girl, who had not been breathing till then, suddenly turned over in her sleep. "My, I've overslept," she said, and opened her big, beautiful eyes. The millionaire's mansion, which up till then had been filled with wailing voices, suddenly resounded with rejoicing. The father thanked the brother with tears of gratitude in his eyes. He bowed to the floor and kissed the young man's feet and said, "You are the savior of my daughter's life. No matter what I give you, I cannot repay you for what you have done. I believe you and my daughter must have been foreordained for each other from a previous life. I hope you will not take offense, but please take my daughter to be your wife." The second son, from that day on, lived in the millionaire's mansion as requested by the rich father. On an auspicious day picked by the soothsayers, the young man and the beautiful daughter were married. No man could be more fortunate than the second son, for not only did he win a beauteous and virtuous wife, but he also received half the millionaire's wealth. Thanks to his father's legacy, the second son was thus elevated in one day from poverty to wealth. Meanwhile, what had happened to the youngest son? Carrying the hand drum left to him by his father, this brother walked on down the road leading to the left. By nature, he was a carefree, happy-go-lucky man. He did not feel at all lonely, separated from his brothers. He traveled on and on for many, many days until finally he saw in the distance a village set beside a beautiful forest. His travels had not been in the least easy, but when he saw the beautiful scenery, he felt a strange feeling of elation. The brother started humming a song all to himself as he passed along a lonely path leading through the fields toward the village. He took down his hand drum and began beating it in time to the tune he was humming. Then, caught in the rhythm of the drum he himself was beating, the young man started singing a song at the top of his voice as he walked on. Suddenly, there appeared from the woods a large yellow animal which seemed to jog along in time to the song the youngest brother was singing. The young man looked closely, and to his surprise, he saw that it was a huge tiger. Of course, the young man was scared, but he kept right on singing and beating his drum. Soon his fear disappeared as he watched the amusing way the tiger danced. The young man beat even more loudly on his drum, and the tiger seemed overjoyed. It lifted its front paws off the ground and came dancing upright after the brother. The young man kept right on singing and beating away, and the tiger kept following him, dancing to the beat of the drum. On and on the two danced, drawing closer and closer to the mountain village. When the villagers saw the huge tiger dancing behind the young man, they all said, "This is a wonderful spectacle, the like of which we have never seen." And one and all, they threw money at the young man. Well, the young man saw what was happening, and he added a new verse to his song. "Come, everybody, come one and all, listen and heed to this my call. Come and see a tiger dance and prance. This is for you a lifetime's chance." After that, everywhere the young man went with his tiger, great crowds gathered to see the marvelous sight of the dancing beast, and money poured into the young man's pockets. Eventually, the story of the young man reached the ears of the king himself. And the king said, "I must see, at least once, a tiger dancing to music. Go and bring the young man here." The young man was led into the presence of the king, still playing his drum and still singing, with the tiger, of course, following him. When the king actually saw the dancing tiger, which he had only heard about till then, he could not help wanting the animal for himself. "I shall pay you any amount you name," the king said to the young man. "Sell me that animal and drum." "No," the youngest brother replied, "this is a treasure that has been handed down to me by my ancestors. No matter how much money you pay me, I cannot part with this, my drum. And without it, the tiger won't dance." In this way, the young man declined the king's growing offers many, many times. But after all, a king is a king, and in the end, the young man could not keep on refusing. So he finally agreed to sell the tiger and the hand drum for the princely sum of 10,000 yuan. Thus, the youngest son also came into great wealth, thanks to his father's dying gift. On the day the three brothers had promised to meet, they gathered once again at the fork of the three roads. They told each other of their hardships and of the wealth they had achieved. When each had told his story, the three brothers praised their father for the precious legacies he had left them. Each was now so wealthy, he had no reason to envy his brothers, and they lived on in happy fraternity for many, many years. You've been listening to a story from The Story Bag, a collection of Korean folk tales by Kim So-eun, published by Tuttle. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. The executive producer is Carla Tanella, and I'm Ellen Whitcher. And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hello, I'm Ellen Whitcher. Today I'll be reading a story from A Harvest of Russian Children's Literature, edited by Miriam Morton. The Mightiest of Them All, a Kazakh folk tale, with a modern ending. Once upon a time, there lived a man named Makbul. He had a daughter. When his daughter became a young woman, Makbul said to her, "My daughter, I should like to know whom you will choose to marry." "Father," she answered, "if you will allow me to choose for myself, then I confess that I should like to marry the strongest thing in the whole world. Man does not seem to have much strength, and I am still but a young maid in need of protector." "Daughter," said old Makbul, "you are indeed asking for a lot. Everyone knows that which is strongest in this world is the sun. But I love you so much, my dear, that I am ready to grant your every wish." Saying this, Makbul took his daughter by the hand, and they set off to speak to the sun. They walked for a long time. At last they reached that faraway place where the plains end. They did not stop there, however, but went on and on. After time, they saw that everything had become so bright that by comparison, the brightest day in the most cloudless weather on the most treeless plain seemed like the darkest hour in the darkest night in the deepest abyss on earth. The blinding light that now surrounded them turned everything into the yellowest of yellows. Sky, earth, road, even the grass and the flowers, all was bathed in this light that was the yellowest of yellows. But old Makbul and his daughter did not halt, they did not turn back, but went tirelessly farther and farther. When they came to the end of this land of light, they saw that again everything had changed. And how it had changed! Now the heat was so intense that by comparison, the hottest hour of the hottest day of the hottest summer in the hottest place on earth seemed like the coldest day in the coldest year in the coldest place in the world. That's how hot it was. And this heat turned everything a red, just like fire. The fire-red road stretched into the fire-red distance over the fire-red earth under the fire-red sky. But old Makbul and his daughter went tirelessly on, moving ever forward. At last they reached the sun. The sun was round, merry, and blinding. Makbul placed his daughter in front of himself and said, "Son, do you see that she is as graceful as a young Arab mare, that her braids are like the branches of the weeping willow, her face the color of white corn, her brows like birds' wings, her lashes like arrows, and that all of her is like a ravishing desert mirage? Do you agree, son, that there is none more fair in the whole world?" I agree, said the sun, that there is none more fair. Sun, Mokbul then said, you were the largest, the hottest, the brightest, the strongest. My daughter is so young and so delicate that she would like to marry the strongest thing in the world. That's why we have come to you. Wait a minute, Mokbul, said the sun, interrupting the old man. I'm willing to take your daughter as my wife. But you're mistaken. I'm not the strongest thing in the world. But it's you who banishes the night, exclaimed Mokbul. It's you who warms the earth. You nourish with your rays the forest, the grasses, and all that grows. If you did not exist, it would be eternal night, eternal hunger, and eternal death. Who can it be that's mightier than you? Look, said the sun, pointing downward. Mokbul lowered his eyes to the ground. Hot sun rays beamed over the earth. Suddenly, however, from somewhere, like flocks of sheep, numberless clouds moved over the whole sky. The sun rays now could no longer pierce the clouds to reach the earth, and they were lost in the mass of the threatening clouds. The cloud is stronger than I, said the sun. He does not let my rays through to shine upon the earth. He's like a veil hiding me from the world, from its people, and against him I am powerless. Do you still want to give me the hand of your daughter in marriage? The sun asked sadly, and with such a somber face that the weather became at once gloomy. Mokbul was at a loss to know what to say and was silent for a while. No, son, I shall not marry you, said Mokbul's daughter. Let's go, father. I thought there was nothing stronger than the sun in the whole wide world, but that's not so. And I went to speak to the cloud. Cloud, do you see my daughter? Asked Mokbul. And as before the sun, the girl appeared before the cloud in all her beauty. I see her, answered the cloud. Do you see, cloud, that she is as graceful as a young Arab mare, that her braids are like the branches of the weeping willow, her face the color of white corn, her brows like bird's wings, her lashes like arrows, and that all of her is like a ravishing desert mirage. Do you agree, cloud, that there's none more fair in the whole world? I agree, said the cloud, that there is none more fair on earth. Cloud, Mokbul then said, we thought that the strongest in the world was the sun, but you have proved your greater strength. Tell me, do you agree to take my daughter to be your wife? I agree, said the cloud, but you're mistaken if you think that I am the strongest. There is a thing mightier than I. Saying this, the cloud shuddered. He began to move, waving his misty sleeves. His long coat billowed out like a sail. His cheeks were about to burst, and gliding off to the side, he barely managed to cry out, woe is me, woe! The restless wind chases me all over the earth to wherever it fancies. Never, never does he give me peace. And the huge, heavy, mighty-looking cloud broke into sobs, pouring over the earth torrents of rain tears. Oh, let's go to the wind, said the girl. Who wants so tearful a bridegroom as a cloud? The wind is no doubt the strongest. And they set off to call on the wind. It was frightened to approach the house where the wind lived. There was such a din and such whistling all about. Believe us, nothing else could be heard there. And to make yourself heard, you had to shout with all your might. Stop groaning and moaning, shouted Mokbul. We want to talk to you. At first, the wind looked out the window. How gloomy, angry, and unkempt he looked, as if he had slept and slept and was not at all slept out. Speak up, he grunted. Be quick about it. I have no time to stand around having talks with you. Mokbul was glad, and so was his daughter. At last, they thought they had found the strongest. The wind will not become gloomy like the sun, and he'll not sob like the cloud. This is indeed a bridegroom. Mokbul now placed his daughter in front of himself and spoke to the wind as he had spoken to the sun and the cloud. The wind listened to what the old man had to say, knit his shaggy brows and breathed into his shaggy beard. And what hurricanes, what blizzards, what cyclones did he bring down upon the earth? The door to
and so impatient was the wind that he himself flew out the window.
"You wicked old man," he roared at Makba, "why did you come to laugh at me? Don't you know that for 1,000 years now I have thrown myself against the mountain that stands in my way? Each time I think that now I shall succeed in rolling him off my path, but there he always stands, giant mountain. He does not stir, and when I strike against him, I scatter in all directions like water flowing over a boulder." And stamping his foot, the wind shook his shaggy head, howled, whistled, and threw himself once more against the mountain.
"Oh, let's go to the giant mountain," said Mokbul's daughter. "What good is the wind as a bridegroom? Giant Mountain is no doubt the strongest of all."
"Hello, Giant Mountain," said Mokbul respectfully.
"Hello, Giant Mountain," said the girl even more respectfully.
"Hello,"
the mountain answered in a thunderous voice. Mokbul and his daughter were at a loss to know how to begin.
"Speak up, old man," said the unreachable mountain, as kindly as he could. "Speak up, do not be afraid. I am so big, so strong, that I cannot talk more softly."
Then Mokbul explained everything to the mountain.
"All this is true," he said, after hearing out Mokbul. "The cloud is stronger than the sun, and the wind is stronger than the cloud, and I am stronger than the wind. All this is true. I am willing to take your daughter to be my wife, but you should know that below in the foothills lives some kind of creature. He does with me as he pleases, and I am powerless before him. Even at this very moment, I feel that something has been stuck into my side, which burns and pricks." And barely did Giant Mountain utter these words when, without any warning, there was such a thud as if something had been shot out of a huge cannon. The mountain rocked, and one of its unreachable peaks split into huge rocks which rolled down its side, and nothing was left of the peak as if it had never existed. From the Emerald Lake hidden by this peak, foaming and splashing, the Emerald River burst forth and cascaded down in a waterfall, gathered and flowed swiftly in a foamy, transparent current toward the parched desert. As if enchanted, Mokbul and his daughter stood rooted to the ground, staring at the hidden river. They looked and marveled at this wonder, and saw, as in a fairy tale, the parched desert turn into a flowering valley, and Giant Mountain, when the rain of rocks ceased and the noise of the river became more steady and calm, himself astonished at what had happened, said, "I look and I am amazed. There never was in the world anything so beautiful as my Emerald Lake, and now there appears even a more beautiful sight, an Emerald River. Parched desert has become a flowering valley. How much beauty has been added." Even the old mountain had never heard, had not known that such a thing could be done.
"Yes, friend Mokbul," said he, turning to the old man, "your daughter is incomparable, and I'm willing to take her as my wife, but I'm not worthy. Go below to the foothills. Look there for a being that, compared to me, is small, but he's really the most mighty. He does with me as he pleases. Go to him." And old Mokbul left with his daughter, descended to the foot of the mountain in search of the mysterious, most mighty being. They walked and walked and looked and looked. And then they saw a man. His shoulders were broad, his hands were strong, and his face was handsome. His eyes shone with contentment and youth. There he stood, merely a man, no different from other men, the same as they were. And he smiled at them.
"Hello," said Mokbul.
"Hello," said his daughter.
"Hello," the man answered.
"Tell us, please, do you happen to know where there lives that unknown being that is stronger than any in this world?" asked Mokbul. Please explain more clearly whom you mean, said the man. I don't understand what you want to know. And Mokbo told him everything.
I am strongest, said the man. You? Mokbo said with surprise. You? Asked the girl, and she blushed. And who are you, Mokbo? And the daughter said in one voice.
I am a master builder, the man answered. I dig into mountains to get from them the treasure that they hold. Iron, ore, gold, and precious stones. I've dug a tunnel through the thickness of Giant Mountain and have laid steel rails over the length of this tunnel. Trains now run over these rails to bring out the treasure. I have built bridges over precipices, and men and machines ride over these bridges as over the ground.
And did you do all this yourself? Exclaimed Mokbo.
Oh, great one, said Mokbo's daughter. If you have done all this yourself, you are indeed the greatest wizard on earth and the strongest being.
No, answered Man, I did not do all this alone, but with other men. We are many, we are countless. What a marvel, said Mokbo. A whole army of great ones. And are they all as strong as you? Oh, much stronger. Among us there are such mighty men, I cannot hope to vie with them. But our strength is not so much in our hands as in our brain, our will, our knowledge. We have solved mysteries of nature. We have solved the mystery of friendship among people. But we are not great ones, but simple folk like you, honorable elder, and you, beautiful maiden. We want man to live happily on earth. At the will of man, canals water dry lands. Strong stone houses are built against the worst hurricanes. Electricity gives man light and warmth. Airplanes, trains, and ships overtake the wind. And there are ever new wonders to be discovered by man. Oh, truly you must be the mightiest of them all, mightier than the sun, the cloud, the wind, or the mountain. Will you take my daughter to be your wife? I will, man answered. And they were wed.
You've been listening to a story from A Harvest of Russian Children's Literature, edited by Miriam Morton and published by the University of California Press. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. Our engineer is Robert Gilfillan. The executive producer is Carla Tanella, and I'm Ellen Whitcher. And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hello, I'm Ellen Whitcher. Today I'll be reading two stories from the book A Harvest of Russian Children's Literature, edited by Miriam Morton. Little Girl and the Swan Geese. Once there was a peasant and his wife, and they had a little girl and a little boy. Daughter, said the mother to her little girl, we're going out to work, so look after your little brother. If you're a good girl and do not go out of doors, we shall buy you a new kerchief. Father and mother went away, but little girl forgot what she had been told. She seated little brother on the grass by the window and ran away to play with her friends. Suddenly a flock of swan geese swooped down, caught up little brother, and carried him off on their wings. Little girl came home, but alas, little brother was gone. She gasped, ran here and there, but not a sign of him was to be found. She called him and sobbed, crying that she would catch it from father and mother, but little brother did not answer. So out she ran into the open field, but could see nothing save some swan geese flying far beyond the dark woods. Suddenly she was sure it was they who had carried her brother off. Folks said the swan geese were wicked birds who stole little children. So off ran little girl after the birds. She ran and ran till she came to an oven.
Oven, oven, tell me where the swan geese have flown. Eat one of my rye loaves, and I will tell you, said the oven.
What, me eat a rye loaf?
At home we do not even eat wheaten loaves. So the oven did not tell her. The little girl ran on a bit farther and saw an apple tree.
Apple tree, tell me where the swan geese have flown.
Eat one of my wild apples, and I will tell you, said the apple tree.
Oh, at home we do not even eat apples from the garden.
So the apple tree did not tell her. And the little girl ran on until she came to Milk River and Fruit Jelly Shores.
Milk River and Fruit Jelly Shores, tell me where the swan geese have flown.
Well, have some of my jelly with milk, and I will tell you. Well, at home we do not even eat jelly with cream. So Milk River did not tell her. All day long she ran about the fields and woods. When evening came, there was nothing left for her to do but go home. All at once, what should she see but a hut on hen's feet with one tiny window turning round and round. Inside the hut sat Baba Yaga, the witch, spinning flax. And on the bench sat little brother playing with silver apples. Little girl went in.
Good evening, Granny.
Well, good evening, little girl. What brings you here?
My frock is wet through with dew, so I've come in to dry.
Well, sit down then and spin some flax. Baba Yaga gave her the spindle and went out. Little girl was sitting there spinning when all of a sudden a mouse ran out from under the stove and said to her, oh, little girl, give me some porridge and I'll tell you something. Little girl gave him some porridge and mouse said, Baba Yaga has gone to make a fire in the bathhouse. She will steam you and wash you, roast you in the oven and eat you up. Little girl began crying and trembling with fear, but the mouse went on, hurry, take little brother and run away and I'll spin the flax for you. So little girl took little brother in her arms and ran off. Baba Yaga came up to the window every once in a while and said, are you spinning, little girl? And mouse would answer, yes, I am, Granny. Baba Yaga made a fire in the bathhouse and came for little girl. But the hut was empty. Baba Yaga cried, fly away, swan geese, fly and catch them. Little girl has carried off little brother. Little girl ran until she came to Milk River. And what did she see there but the swan geese coming after her and her brother? Milk River, hide me, do, cried little girl. Well, eat some of my plain fruit jelly. Little girl ate some and said, thank you. So Milk River hid her and little brother in the shadow of its fruit jelly shores, and the swan geese flew past without seeing them. And little girl ran on again, but the swan geese turned back and flew straight toward her. At any moment they would see her. What was she to do? She ran up to the apple tree. Oh, apple tree, hide me, do. Eat my wild apples. Little girl ate one quickly and said, thank you. And the apple tree hid her among its leaves and branches. The swan geese flew past without seeing her. Little girl picked up her brother and ran on again. When she had almost reached home, the swan geese caught sight of her. They honked and flapped their wings and in another minute would have torn little brother out of her arms. Little girl came running to the oven. Oven, oven, hide me, do. Eat one of my rye loaves. Little girl popped a piece of a loaf into her mouth and crawled into the oven with her brother. The swan geese flew round and round, screaming and honking, but after a while they gave up the chase and flew back to Baba Yaga. Little girl said thank you to the oven and ran home with little brother. And before long, father and mother came home. Tiny Havrasheshka. There are good people in the world and some who are not so good. There are also people who are shameless in their wickedness. Tiny Havrasheshka had the bad luck to fall in with such as these. She was an orphan, and these people took her in and brought her up only to make her work till she couldn't stand up. She wove and spun and did all the housework and had to answer for everything. Now, the mistress of the house had three daughters. The eldest was called One Eye, the second, Two Eyes, and the youngest, Three Eyes. The three sisters
sisters did nothing all day but sit by the gate and watch what went on in the street, while tiny Havashetchka sewed, spun, and wove for them and never heard a kind word in return. Sometimes tiny Havashetchka would go out into the field, put her arms around the neck of her brindled cow, and pour out all her sorrows to her. "Brindled, my dear," she would say, "they beat me and scold me, and they don't give me enough to eat, and yet they forbid me to cry. I am to have 5 poods. A pood is a Russian weight equal to about 36 pounds. Of flax spun, woven, bleached, and rolled by tomorrow." And the cow would say in reply, "Oh, my pretty one, you have only to climb into one of my ears and come out through the other, and your work will be done for you." And just as Brindled said, so it was. Tiny Havashetchka would climb into one of the cow's ears and come out through the other, and lo and behold, there lay the cloth, all spun, woven, bleached, and rolled. Tiny Havashetchka would then take the rolls of cloth to her mistress, who would look at them and grunt and put them away in her chest, and then give Tiny Havashetchka even more work to do. And Tiny Havashetchka would go to Brindled, put her arms around her and stroke her, climb into one of her ears and come out through the other, pick up the ready cloth and take it to her mistress. One day the old woman called her daughter One Eye and said to her, "My good child, my pretty child, go and see who helps the orphan with her work. Find out who spins the thread, weaves the cloth, and rolls it." One Eye went with Tiny Havashetchka into the fields, and she went with her into the woods, but she forgot her mother's command, and she basked in the sun and lay down in the grass. And Havashetchka whispered, "Sleep, little eye, sleep." One Eye shut her eye, and she fell asleep. And while she slept, Brindled wove, bleached, and rolled the cloth. The mistress learned nothing, so she sent for her second daughter, Two Eyes. "My good child, my pretty child, go and see who helps the orphan with her work." Two Eyes went with Tiny Havashetchka, but she forgot her mother's command, and she too basked in the sun and lay down on the grass. And Tiny Havashetchka murmured, "Sleep, little eye, sleep, the other little eye." Two Eyes shut her eyes, and she dozed off. While she slept, Brindled wove, bleached, and rolled the cloth. The old woman was very angry, and on the third day she told her third daughter, Three Eyes, to go with Tiny Havashetchka, to whom she gave more work to do than ever. Three Eyes played and skipped about in the sun until she was so tired she lay down on the grass, and Tiny Havashetchka sang out, "Sleep, little eye, sleep, the other little eye." But she forgot all about the third little eye. Two of Three Eyes fell asleep, but the third one looked on and saw everything. It saw Tiny Havashetchka climb into one of the cow's ears and come out through the other and pick up the ready cloth. Three Eyes came home and told her mother what she had seen. The old woman was overjoyed, and on the very next day she went to her husband and said, "Go and kill the brindled cow." Well, the old man was astonished and tried to reason with her. "Have you lost your wits, old woman?" he said. "The cow is a good one and still young. Kill it and say no more," the wife insisted. The old man began to sharpen his knife. Oh, Tiny Havashetchka knew what her father was about to do. She ran to the field and threw her arms around Brindled. "Brindled, my dear," she said, "they're going to kill you." And the cow replied, "Oh, do not grieve, my pretty one, and do what I tell you. Take my bones, tie them up in a handkerchief, bury them in the garden, and water them every day. Do not eat of my flesh, and never forget me." The old man killed the cow, and Tiny Havashetchka did as Brindled had told her to. She went hungry, but she would not touch the meat, and she buried the bones in the garden and watered them every day. After a while, apple tree grew out of them, and what a wonderful tree it was. Its apples were round and juicy, its swaying boughs were of silver, and its rustling leaves were of gold. Whoever drove by would stop to look at the tree, and whoever came near marveled. A long time passed by, and a little time. One day, One Eye, Two Eyes,
handsome and strong and rich and curly-haired. When he saw the juicy apples, he stopped and said to the girls teasingly, fair maidens, her will I marry amongst you three, who brings me an apple off yonder tree. And all thrust his sisters to the apple tree, each trying to get ahead of the others. But the apples, which had been hanging very low and seemed within easy reach, now swung up high in the air, way above the sisters' heads. The sisters tried to knock them down, but the leaves came down in a shower and blinded them. They tried to pluck the apples off, but the boughs caught in their braids and unplaited them. Struggle and stretch as they would, they could not reach the apples and only scratched their hands. Then Tiny Havasheska walked up to the tree, and at once the boughs bent down and the apples came into her hands. She gave an apple to the handsome young stranger. He thanked her and said, fair maiden, I shall marry thee who brought me an apple from yonder tree. From that day on, Tiny Havasheska knew no sorrow, for she and her husband lived happily ever after. You've been listening to stories from the book A Harvest of Russian Children's Literature, edited by Miriam Morton and published by University of California Press. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. Our engineer is Robert Gilfillan. The executive producer is Carla Tanella, and I'm Ellen Whitcher.